I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and we're building bridges. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy. He remains with us. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy. In his own words, are the revolutionary ideas that make Elhaj Malik al-Shabazz, Malcolm X, one of the most charismatic and influential leaders in American history. They are the thoughts of a determined leader during a turbulent, sometimes impossible time, and invaluable in understanding not only the historic context of the civil rights and black power movements, but also contemporary identity and culture in the United States. The films, the clips from, the speeches that we present document Malcolm's progression to Pan-Africanism, to radical internationalism, and they're key in reminding that one of our most eminent political thinker espouses political, social, and economic theories together with concepts of race and class to address the complex problems of our times. Malcolm X's place in history continues to evolve. 57 years ago, more than a life of a great leader was lost. The country lost a chance to address issues of white supremacy that today are the root and help advance fascism taking root again in the body politic. And now, Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy.
Here, at this final hour, in this quiet place, Harlem has come to bid farewell to one of its brightest hopes, extinguished now and gone from us forever. It is not in the memory of man that this beleaguered, unfortunate, but nonetheless proud community has found a braver, more gallant young champion than this Afro-American who lies before us, unconquered still. I say the word again as he would want me to, Afro-American. Afro-American Malcolm. Malcolm had stopped being Negro years ago. It had become too small, too puny, too weak a word for him. Malcolm was bigger than that. Malcolm had become an Afro-American, and he wanted so desperately that we, that all his people, would become Afro-Americans too. There are those who still consider it their duty, as friends of the Negro people, to tell us to revile him, to flee even from the presence of his memory, to save ourselves by writing him out of the history of our turbulent times. And we will smile. They will say that he is of hate, a fanatic, a racist, who can only bring evil to the cause for which you struggle. And we will answer and say unto them, did you ever talk to Brother Malcolm? Did you ever touch him or have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him?
You haven't done the right thing.
Was he ever himself associated with violence or any public disturbance? For if you did, you would know him. And if you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people. And in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves. However much we may have differed with him or with each other about him and his value as a man, let his going from us serve only to bring us together now. Consigning these mortal remains to earth, the common mother of all, secure in the knowledge that what we place in the ground is no more now a man, but a seed, which after the winter of our discontent will come forth again to meet us, and we shall know him then for what he was and is, a prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
Malcolm X is you, all of you. And you are Malcolm X.
I'm 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 Malcolm X.
I am 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 Malcolm X.
As Brother Malcolm said, we declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be given the rights of a human being, to be respected as a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intended to bring into existence.
By any means necessary.
Salaam alaikum. Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here. As many of you know, last March, when it was announced that I was no longer in the Black Muslim movement, it was pointed out that it was my intention to work among the 22 million non-Muslim Afro-Americans and to try and form some type of organization or create a situation where the young people, our young people, the students and others, could study the problems of our people for a period of time and then come up with a new analysis and give us some new ideas and some new suggestions as to how to approach a problem that too many other people had been playing around with for too long. And that we would have some kind of meeting and determine at a later date whether to form a Black Nationalist Party or a Black Nationalist Army. There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people. And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with. Also, recently, when I was blessed to make a trip or a pilgrimage, a religious pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca, where I met many people from all over the world, plus spent many weeks in Africa trying to broaden my own scope and get more of an open mind to look at the problem as it actually is. One of the things that I realized, and I realized this even before going over there, was that our African brothers have gained their independence faster than you and I here in America have. They've also gained recognition and respect as human beings much faster than you and I. Just 10 years ago on the African continent, our people were colonized. They were suffering all forms of colonization, oppression, exploitation, degradation, humiliation, discrimination, and every other kind of Asian. And in a short time, they have gained more independence, more recognition, more respect as human beings than you and I have. And I live in a country which is supposed to be the citadel of education, freedom, justice, democracy, all of those other pretty soundings. So it was our intention to try and find out what was our African brothers doing to get results so that you and I could study what they had done and perhaps gain from that study or benefit from their experiences. And my traveling over there was designed to help to find out how. One of the first things that the independent African nations did was to form an organization called the Organization of African Unity. The purpose of our Organization of Afro-American Unity, which has the same aim and objective, to fight whoever gets in our way. To bring about the complete independence of people of African descent here in the Western Hemisphere and first here in the United States, and bring about the freedom of these people by any means necessary. That's our motto. The purpose of our organization is to start right here in Harlem, which has the largest concentration of people of African descent that exists anywhere on this earth. There are more Africans here in Harlem than exist in any city on the African continent, because that's what you and I are, Africans. The Charter of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights are the principles in which we believe, and that these documents, if put into practice, represent the essence of mankind's hopes and good intentions, desirous that all Afro-American people and organizations should henceforth unite so that the welfare and well-being of our people will be assured. We are resolved to reinforce the common bond of purpose between our people by submerging all of our differences and establishing non-sectarian constructive programs for human rights. We hereby present this charter, number one, the establishment. The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what it is saying, instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom, in the Irish neighborhood, or the Jewish neighborhood, or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. That's a drag. Number two, self-defense. Since self-preservation is the first law of nature, we assert the Afro-American's right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
more than remembering Malcolm. Malcolm was an architectural genius. He built bridges between the local struggles against racism throughout the United States and anti-colonial struggles in Africa and Asian and Latin America, between civil rights in Black America and human rights in the African diaspora, between the New Deal Black Renaissance and the Black Arts Renaissance, and between the Paul Robeson political generation and the Black Power generation. He developed insights that penetrated the language of universalism, obscuring the contours of racial oppression in the Jim Crow North and housing and schooling, policing, sports and labor. Coming of age in Black America, Malcolm X learned the myriad sources of brilliance that flowered in the grassroots. Yes, one of the poetic insights of Malcolm X that made him such a great leader was that Black America was crowded with genius. Now, this program considers how Malcolm's public advocacy continues to resonate in a contemporary political context. Our broadcast examines Malcolm's philosophic system and invokes Malcolm to understand the man and his times, as well as for us in our milieu to understand how Malcolm's contributions serve us. And so let's get back to the Malcolm Library, the overall program, the end of white world supremacy, Malcolm X. We are engaging in teaching, educating, agitating, and organizing through the incomparable brilliance of Malcolm X, looking at the end of white world supremacy. Malcolm ended talking about generations and how generations look at things. And we've just got a call in from somebody who is part of that next generation, who's going to discuss with us Malcolm X's impact on the Black liberation movement. And we have with us online Khalil Anderson, who is the youngest African-American member of the New York State Assembly, representing Southeast Queens, the 31st District, in its history, and he is chair of the Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian Legislative Caucus Committee on Reparations and Political Prisoners. Who knew, in the state legislature? Khalil Anderson, how are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mimi. I'm doing well. I'm traveling back from Albany, and I'm just so thankful to be on the program of the life and legacy of Malcolm X and what he means today, and how we can continue to use, you know, our power as legislators, as activists, as community organizers, even as spiritual leaders, some folk, to keep his vision and his message alive in our community.
How does that vision actually affect you as a young person? What do you think it means, and why does it still have resonance, and why should it have even more resonance in the ongoing process for Black liberation at this time? At this time,
yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mimi. So, for me, being, I never like to call myself a politician. I'm an elected activist. I think I was sent to Albany to advocate and activate our communities to get free, but to also liberate, you know, their minds and liberate their spirits that have been downtrodden for many a reason, one of which is white supremacy. And we saw an example of white supremacy when 10 people were murdered in cold blood by a white supremacist racist who thought it was okay to enter into a grocery store and kill our folks. And why Malcolm's legacy is so important as we again celebrate his 97th birthday is that he was a staunch advocate for Pan-Africanism. He was a strong advocate for uplifting and getting black folks to understand their richness and their power and their culture. That's one of the tools that we can use to fight back against white supremacy when black people know who they are and from whence they came, and they can have that sense of empowerment and sense of understanding. That's one piece of it. But also as a young person, many young people, and I believe his daughter talked about it on the Today Show last year, roughly, give or take, about his searches. He's still among the top searches, Malcolm, is among the top searches on social media platforms because people want to know. They want to know, you know, why he was such a great figure, what he did to empower folks, what his independent thinking and theory did to empower folks. And so that's how we keep his legacy alive, is by studying him, studying what, you know, his arguments were. He was a very good debater. He was a very intellectual being. He was someone who, again, promoted independent and free thinking. I would definitely say that independent thinking is what brought me here to the assembly, because we didn't come here following the traditional norm of how you get into elected office. We worked with the people, and we organized the people. And these are the things, even in Malcolm X's speeches around grassroots and organizing, these are things that we have to continue to hold on to today to keep his legacy alive and his teachings alive.
Khalil Anderson, I'm thinking about Buffalo for the moment. Buffalo is the seventh most segregated city in the country for black Americans. The black population had a median household income of $28,000 in 2019 with a 31% poverty rate, while white residents had a $49,000 income and a 9.1% poverty rate. How does Malcolm relate, as you understand it and think about it, to the massacre that occurred in Buffalo? Why is it so important to listen and understand Malcolm in relationship to the massacre that occurred in Buffalo and the reality? It's the seventh most segregated city in the country for black Americans. It is one of the most disparately impoverished compared to the white population. So where does Malcolm fit in to understanding and dealing systemically with Buffalo?
Thank you for that question, Mimi. So one of the things that Malcolm preached was self-determination. Us doing for self. He said in one of his speeches, you know, that when you find yourself working for your master, you're in a bad state. Or when you find yourself working or looking for employment and dependent on your master for employment, you're in a bad state. And what did he mean by that? He meant that we as a people have to create our own opportunities so that we can have action towards economic freedom and economic transparency for our people. And there's a real opportunity for us to do that. The income inequality that you speak about, that our brothers and sisters are experiencing in Buffalo, this unfortunately is the ghettoization of our communities that has been perpetuated by white supremacy, that's been created by white supremacy, telling us that we can only have certain things and limited things. Tops grocery store, which is where the massacre took place. It's no surprise that it was the only access to food in that immediate community, in that immediate area, neighborhood. And that is done by design. So one of the things that Malcolm teaches us is to, again, independent thinking, and to remove ourselves from mental bondage. There's two different types of slavery that continue to exist today. It's mental bondage, and it's the new Jim Crow. And so when he had his 1963, Malcolm X gave his 1963 speech, where he talked about the difference between the house Negro and the field Negro, he was talking about a mentality that perpetuates within us that crumbs are acceptable, crumbs are how we eat, and he was denouncing that ideology of us settling for less. And for us thinking that the minimum is good enough.
And I'm, as time passes and we have to sit down with you when you're not in transit between Albany and back to Queens to have a more developed discussion on some of your work. And we are speaking with Khalil Anderson, who, as I said, is the youngest African-American member of the New York State Assembly representing Southeast Queens, the chair of the Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian Legislative Caucus Committee on Reparations and Political Prisoners. And I said, wow, who knew there was such a thing in the state legislature?
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.